Around Comics, Episode 50, Part 2.
The Chicago Minicon, this is Around Comics, a weekly roundtable discussing topics in and around the world of comics. I'm your host, Christopher Niesman, and I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime and the co-host of Around Comics, Mr. Brian Salazar.
The 50th episode was just too big to fit into one 50th episode.
It's so 100-page 50, spectacular.
Yeah, we squeezed in...
It's 50.1.
Or 50B, or whatever. Talk to the bulletins, guys. They know how to number things.
51 is all the bonus.
Bonus, like material. DVD bonus tracks?
Yeah, this is here. There's a commentary that comes along with this.
Can you shut up until I announce you? Come on, Tom. 50 episodes, you still haven't gotten 50. It right.
Don't talk to the talent like that. What, are you crazy?
And our Around Comics regular, Mr. Tom Caters.
Welcome to VeggieCon.
Yeah, you'll figure out what that means a little bit later in the show. Anyway, we are going to give you the second half of our 50th episode and everything that goes on at the Chicago Minicon, which has been a really fun day for all of us here. And
long day.
Yeah, really long day. We keep saying that every episode we do.
We're not very efficient. Whiny bitches.
Well,
crying about it takes so long.
A lot of fun stuff. You get to talk to a lot of fun people today. And
fun, everyone, exciting, creative, intelligent, wonderful.
I guess we should just get to it then, right?
Have at it.
Here it is.
All right. All right, we're sitting here with our guest of honor for the signing today.
Yeah, he's the biggest name here. I
strong,
think.
Absolutely.
The headliner.
Physically
the
headliner.
Strong.
Yeah, biggest, like, longest, biggest letters.
Yes, the fonts.
Can bench press the most.
I had told him, we should introduce Bill Reinhold.
Bill Reinhold. Yes.
Bill, welcome.
Howdy.
I actually told him earlier, I said my dream was to have two former Badger pencilers in the same room at the same time, but Mike Norton couldn't make it. So.
He's down in Memphis.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah, it would have been kind
of. He sucked away all of our Tennessee traffic, as he said.
So does everybody know where we are right now?
They should. We record out of the shop every Friday. So.
Oh, okay. Well, this is my old neighborhood. I used to live right down the street near Foster and Western.
Yeah, Lincoln
on
Square.
Western Avenue, yeah.
The
went to
still
high school.
The greatest neighborhood in Chicago.
It's great, yeah. Well, it's gotten even better.
Yeah. I lived here for about 3 years, and now I live west of here in Albany Park, and I miss Lincoln Square.
And Albany Park sucks.
In comparison.
Well, since I hardly ever leave my basement studio, in a way it doesn't matter where I live.
It's all the same.
Well, you're now a suburbanite, but still a Chicago guy.
Very much so.
What do you think about this Chicago scene that's here? It has amazed us, you know, not just today, but the weeks leading up to this, the amount of creators that live in Chicago that you wouldn't even know.
Well, actually, what's amazing about comics nowadays is there's so many people in it, there are so many books published, but the sales are really low. It's kind of hard to figure out. I think this is one of the most creative times ever for comic books. I mean, there's books on every genre out there. Superheroes still rule, you know, that is in sales. But there's just all kinds of work out there. I think it's really exciting. But unfortunately, some of the most interesting stuff I see, and I meet the creators, and they're doing it for free, basically.
Yeah.
You know, it's like a side job.
Right.
You know, I'm fortunate to, you know, be working for Marvel or DC or whoever, where it's actually a paying gig.
Now, you're working Amazing Spider-Man right now?
Amazing Spider-Man inking Ron Garney.
Okay.
Who I worked with a little while on Green Arrow. We did a few issues of that right before.
Okay.
And so when Ron had the opportunity to go back to Marvel, his contract ended with DC, and so he went back over to Marvel, or at least started talking to them, and Amazing Spider-Man came up, and he called me up and says,
Have you heard of this book?
Yeah. Yeah. You want to come
some
with me?
Some sort of Spider-Man.
I said, sure, it'd be great. And so we've been doing it now for about, I think we've done about 6 issues now. And still going.
So you're tied up in the middle of Civil War.
Yeah,
right,
the
now.
Civil War. Yeah, but, yeah. So I would say as long as that's going on, you can be sure we'll still be on it, and hopefully more.
Huh?
People are coming up and hitting Bill Reinhold.
Sorry, Bill.
Hillary Barda.
I never hit a nicer guy.
AKA Splash Brannigan.
Getting blasted mad.
I'll be leaving now.
After
your podcast.
See you.
Getting punched in the head.
I mean, how long? Are you the elder statesman here today? Is it
Hillary Barda, just banged me in the head. He may have a little bit on me, but I've been doing it for 25 years now.
Okay, that's a good one.
I started in 81.
Now,
what was that on?
25 yeah. years in here. Get interviewed by the bathroom.
That's right. They don't know. They don't know where we're at.
We're in the West Wing.
It could be a sparkling hotel
frisky
suite.
Frisky porcelain.
Yeah. Actually, the first thing I ever did, I did a story that I wrote and drew while I was going to school at the American Academy of Art in Chicago. And I did this story for a book for Charlton Comics. They were going to put out some new material done by amateurs just to give them a chance. At the time, Charlton Comics was only reprinting books. That's all they were doing. They weren't doing any new material. So they called it Charlton Bullseye, which was the name of a fanzine they had previous years. And so I wrote and drew this 10-page story, and they accepted it. But by the time I was done with it, they decided not to put that book out anymore. But they liked my work, so they put it in Scary Tales, which was kind of cool to me because that's an actual book. And so that was the first thing I ever did that was going to be published. But the first published work I did was on a book called Justice Machine, put up by Noble Comics out of Detroit. And I did that for a while before my biggest long gig after that was doing the Badger for First Comics.
You just got Sal excited.
That was 1984 when I started doing the work on the Badger.
Yeah. And Sal, big Badger fan.
Yeah, I'm huge. I bought a page from Bill today because I got to have my Badger stuff. I loved that book when I was 14, 15 when I first started reading Badger, and it was like the first indie stuff that I ever read, and it was about a psychopathic, you know, schizophrenic superhero, and there wasn't anything out like that anywhere.
Yeah,
you know, I never
really unique character.
Yeah.
I mean, we for years everybody talked about their, you know, maybe being a movie and this and that, and you know, none of that came about. But yeah, great character. Mike Baron created it.
It had a huge run, and a lot of different guys have touched that character.
Well, it was actually co-created by Mike Baron and Jeffrey Butler. And Jeffrey Butler drew like the first four issues and then left to do other kinds of illustration work. And so I was asked originally to just do a couple fill-in issues, but then we just did it regular.
So. Now, after you left Badger and moved on, what did you do after that? I know there was a pretty long stint on Batman, right?
I did do Batman work, but that was later. The first thing that happened was Mike Baron was becoming a very popular writer. He was doing a lot of stuff in the 80s. And he started writing The Punisher, which was the beginning of the first series. There was a limited series that Mike Zeck drew, and then Klaus Janson started drawing the regular Punisher series, and Mike Baron wrote that. So Mike had been doing it for a while, and they needed a new artist, and it was kind of good timing for me because I'd been doing Badger for a long time, just did a Badger graphic novel, and so it was a good time for me to make a change. And so he asked me if I'd like to draw the Punisher, and at first I actually was kind of reluctant because I would be giving up some things I had going for me working for First Comics, which is I was penciling and inking the book. And at Marvel I knew I'd only be penciling, and at first I didn't want to do it, but I gave in, and I did a graphic novel first and then the regular series. Between the regular series and a couple graphic novels, I did it for a few years.
I was looking. It's funny. I was looking through your pages today, and I saw the Punisher work, you know, the pages from the Punisher that you had done in that, and I was amazed at how much it looked a lot like the current Punisher series, and that's a lot of like
it's being done now.
A lot of the original artwork that I saw of yours, it's like I was amazed at how many styles are very much like yours. Like how many current style artists are.
Well,
a
there
lot
are people.
Like,
there are some people who work in a more realistic style, you know, who aren't working in so much the cartoony or stylized style. And I've always leaned towards realistic, and so. No, they're just. Actually, I think it's the people who draw like that are usually the people who probably went to school to learn how to draw, and they tended to draw more realistic. And so I have something in common with those people. And so sometimes I think it would be a similarity just from that. You know,
there's actually a society, the Disciples of Bill Reinhold.
Yeah. Yeah. But of course, sometimes I've inked some of that Punisher stuff, so it might look like me there. So, and other people.
That could,
so.
That could be that.
I inked Doug Braithwaite for a while on the Punisher, and
that's that.
And now
that
I'm making more Punisher right now, actually, on Land Medina for a story arc that starts in January.
Oh, all right. Is that for the War Journal or the Max series?
The regular Max series.
Okay.
Yeah.
And now Max is hanging around. We'd actually just talked to Matt Fraction a little while ago, who's writing the new relaunch of War Journal. So we're starting to see more Punisher series come out, which, you know, I think that character had peaked for a while and then kind of, you know, tailed off.
Saturated the market, as they call it.
No.
What?
They wouldn't do that.
I fortunately had left the Punisher before that happened, but...
He was everywhere.
It was everywhere. They had so many books and spinoffs. And the closest I came to that is I did. They asked me to do a what if story. Marvel asked me to do a what if story, and it was what if Nick Fury killed the Punisher. And so I was drawing the story. I penciled it. And
Marvel stock would go down 10%.
Yeah. Well, actually, at the time, see, Punisher that was really reaching its. And people were getting sick of it. Oh, yeah. And so I finished penciling this story, and they called me up and said, stop working on it. We're not going to publish it.
Really?
They didn't want to do any more what-if stories outside of X-Men. Everything was what-if X-Men stories after that. So, yeah, so I did get a taste of the dying Punisher reign.
Drowning in the pool of Punisher.
Yeah.
Most of your work these days, inking?
The only time I'm drawing my own work nowadays is an occasional pin-up. I've done some work for Upper Deck, trading cards. But no, inking takes up all my time. So.
Now, who do you really like inking over?
I've lucked out working with a lot of good artists. It's kind of hard to say I have favorites, but I suppose if I picked anybody, it'd be Doug Braithwaite. But that's partially because we worked together for so long, and so I've really gotten to sync with him. We worked on the Earth-X trilogy where it went into Universe-X and Paradise-X. He penciled all that. He's the penciler in Justice right now for DC,
yeah.
That Alex Ross is painting. So I inked all that stuff, and then we did Hulk work and Punisher work. And so we did a lot of work together. But now I'm really enjoying working with Ron Garney now, too, because we've been doing it for a while. And once you, for me personally, once I start working with a penciler, after a while you kind of just start to think the same about things. And the penciler doesn't have to really overly be concerned about how you handle something. He knows how you're going to do it. One thing I like is when pencilers start working with me for a while, they start to loosen up a little bit, because pencilers can be really controlling where they put every line down because they want it to be inked exactly like that.
Right.
Which is
now
I hate to I hate tracing stuff. So it's like, to me, it's nicer if a penciler loosens up a little bit, gives me some room to do my own thing, and then you have kind of a meshing of styles.
Well, and I think with Ron's stuff, I think your inks on room have really done a nice job on his pencils, because I always thought a lot of times his pencils come off as not cartoony, but maybe too loose or too...
Well, I know what you mean, but I think that sometimes that just comes from the inkers he has. I mean, some people just have a hard time, being able to do their own work on top of it, you might say.
Right.
Because truthfully, traditional pencilers years ago did not do super tight pencils. They left room for the inker. And if it looked good back then, it's because half the time the inkers were artists themselves. And so, you know, there was no need for somebody to, you know, be so delineated in everything they do. So Ron, I think, you know, a guy like him sometimes is at the whim of who inks him.
Sure.
If he gets a good artist inking him, it looks great. If he gets somebody who can't handle it, then it's not going to look great. So that's kind of how it goes. I think, to me, the best inker on Ron is himself. He does really nice work on himself. And that's usually true of any artist because you get the true
vision
artist
of what they want.
Yeah. So, you know, he has to give up a little bit for me. You know, I'm sure he looks at my work, and there's things he'll look at and go, well, I wouldn't have done it like that, but it looks okay. You know, so
we were talking to Jimmy Palmiotti. Who was he talking about that he had been offered to ink their stuff? And it was Paul Gulacy. He's like, no, Paul, if you have time, ink your stuff, because he loves when Paul Gulacy inks his own work.
Exactly. Yeah, I'd say most of the people I've worked with are very good at doing it themselves. And so in that way, if somebody compliments me, I can say, well, I'm not doing anything that they couldn't do anyways. You know, the best thing I can do is hold their stuff up to what it should be, you know. So that's my goal, is that I'm not going to hurt it. You know, it should look as good as what they did in pencil. That is, as a piece of art. Not, I might be adding more detail and things like that, but still, you know, I'm not going to take it down a level.
But you've been on both sides. You've penciled and inked your own stuff. So you see both sides of that. But it seems like, you know, inkers and colorists are kind of like the offensive line of comic books. It's like you if everything works right,
you don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, if it all works well together, I mean, that's almost like one person doing it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, are you still having fun, I guess, is the big question in this crazy industry?
Yeah, I still enjoy my work, but it is a job, too. And so, I mean, there's times where, you know, the deadline is crunched down and you just have to work like crazy. And I suppose that's where your talent would come in, that you can get it done, you know. But, you know, it's always too fast for me. I always want it to slow down and take my time. But you can only do that so much without making a book late.
Yeah.
Or getting yelled at by your editor.
Getting
angry. I'm sure in 25 years that's never happened, right?
I've yelled at a couple myself.
Once. It happened once.
Well, Bill, thank you so much,
sure,
for coming and being part of the signing. It was exciting whenever you agreed to do it.
Nice to come back to the old hood.
Yeah, you gonna go out?
The old haunts.
You gonna enjoy the Lincoln Square nightlife tonight?
No, unfortunately, no. I'm gonna meet up with a friend just inside Evanston on the way home. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, anytime you want to come down.
A couple of my brothers came here today because they live in the neighborhood.
But family never totally moves out, right?
No, they haven't. Some families are. There was five siblings, and you know, some families they go all different parts of the world, but everybody's hung around the Chicago area. No, one's in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that almost counts.
Yeah. So. But that relates to the badger then.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Bill, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
And any time that you want to talk with us, just drop us a line.
Same here.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks a lot,
Bill.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Ed Brubaker. When I'm not waiting for the trade, I like to listen to a Around Comics podcast.
All right, our 50th episode and the Chicago Minicon rolls on. Our next guest is Francesco.
Woohoo! You said it right.
Exclamation.
Yay! Exclamation point.
You can't just say it.
I was
thinking about that today, actually, on the drive in. I'm like, well, we're going to have to talk to Francesco. And it's like,
wait, we have to say it.
You have
Francesco.
To?
We get to.
Well,
we get to.
I didn't mean it that way.
I just meant.
Great.
But I was like,
interview over.
Fuck you! Exclamation
point. Best email leading up to the Minicon is I send out and I have Francesco's name and without the exclamation point, and I get this email back like 10 minutes later, and it's Francesco. He's like, that's great and thank you. I'm really looking forward to the signing. But can you make sure to put the exclamation point on my name?
Or I'll hunt you down.
Yeah, I was like, no problem, dude. Exclamation point.
So were you the first guy to do that with your name? The exclamation point?
I don't know. But we could go with that.
Yeah,
I am the first.
I'm
sorry. Anybody else is second.
Yeah.
So sorry, y'all.
Hey, Ringo, I know he does it.
Oh,
and,
please.
You know, yeah.
Oh, what is, no, Mike's awesome.
Oh, Bendis does it on his board.
Yeah, actually, Ringo's
actually
great.
I do it now.
No, because I love his work, and he's a friend of mine. So for a while there, I was doing my own, like, creator-owned thing, and I still will do more eventually. But I asked him to do my character in his style.
Uh-huh.
And so he penciled it, and I inked it. So he signed it, you know, he signed it Ringo, and I signed it Chesco. Because,
well,
you know,
cool.
We got to simplify it, because nobody can say we're Ringo. So he had to, like, whittle that bad boy down,
sure.
Like Joe Manerera. You know, well, for the longest time, people couldn't say the poor guy's name. And so... Mad.
I'm butcher so many names on this show.
There's no one named
Sal's
Smith
for
in
it.
Comic
I,
books.
I can't.
There's no Smiths or Andersons. They're all.
Unless it's Barry Windsor.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
but he's got going,
Barry
he's got Windsor. Throwing, you know, the middle name. Yeah. Well, Francesco.
With an exclamation point.
With
Francesco.
Francesco.
Oh, God, no. We're not going to do that the whole time. I'm sorry. No, you can say it like a normal person. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
She-Dragon is probably what you're working on right now. Is that correct?
Well, actually, it's one of the things that I worked on recently.
Okay.
And it was one of those dream projects that comes along. It's like, what do you say about something that you get a chance to work on that you would normally pick up even if you didn't work on it? You know, because I'm a fan, but I don't pick up every single comic book that comes out every week. Nobody does. I mean, even
you
if
can't.
You're a Marvel zombie, you possibly can't. But... this happens to be one of those projects that even if I didn't draw it, I would still pick it up because I'm a huge Savage Dragon fan, and I'm a huge Eric Larson fan. Actually, I've been a huge fan of the Savage Dragon even before Image came along. And
yeah.
So the idea of actually getting a chance to work on this was fantastic.
And I think it's done very well, and it's one that I think that people associate you with now. But, you know, other projects that you've worked on, which my favorite, and just because you did two sketches for me today for my fiancé's nephews, and if you look at She-Dragon and go, yeah, I think I've seen his work before. It's VeggieTales, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I could see how you could put two and two together right there. Right there.
She-Dragon, VeggieTales, I see it. So.
No, but that's a total blessing because I would never seek that out. That actually was a blessing that kind of fell into my lap. Because when someone contacted me about contributing to VeggieTales, this was about 5-6 years ago, if not more, they used to actually be here in Chicago.
They were in
Lombard,
right?
Yeah.
Right by my house.
Well, actually, pre-Lombard, they were out in the city, where
okay.
You actually have to, like, struggle to find parking. And stuff. Not like here or anything.
Yeah, sorry about that.
No. Yeah, you'll get the towing bill.
Yeah.
No, but what happened was the phone call happens, and I never heard of this particular company. Big Idea was not something that was part of my vocabulary. And they were trying to describe it to me. It's veggies, and they talk, but I just didn't see it in my head. But here, I thought, well, I was busy, but I figured it sounded like they really needed some help. And I thought it was a small operation kind of thing, and they needed some artwork. I was like, okay. It's almost like helping a little old lady across the street.
Right.
If you can do it, you go ahead and do
sure.
it.
Help these nice vegetarians.
Exactly. So it turns out that there I was, thinking I was doing them a big favor. As it turns out, when they sent me the reference material, this is back in the day when VHS was big. There was no DVD back then. And I popped it in, and I was an instant fan. The minute I did, because they were spoofing Batman at the time.
Oh,
in
yeah.
One of their episodes where the main character likes to dress up like a superhero.
Larry. Was that Larry?
Larry.
Oh, God. I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, of course not. Ixnay on the Larry name. And so what happened was, it was like well-crafted. I love computer animation. I love superheroes. And it had all that and then some. And so I did a little something that they asked me for. They said thank you, which is not something I'm used to. No. No, all kidding aside, they were like, can you do a little more? It's like, sure, no problem. So I've been freelancing for them for the past like 5 or 7 years.
Wow.
Actually, it feels like it was only yesterday, but I feel very fortunate. Every time I get a phone call or an email or something, boom, I'm right there.
And
I just wrapped up some stuff recently.
And that franchise, or don't know if you call it a franchise, but they really exploded.
That's an excellent way to describe it, because that was like a word of mouth thing. It was just two guys. They met in like puppeteering school. I didn't even know they had school for puppeteering.
Like mime school.
I know.
It's like Fame. It's like throwing your puppets to the ground. They're like, I'm never going to be a puppeteer.
Yes. Storm out of the room.
You must make your puppet cry. Why? Your puppet doesn't look like it's really sad.
Make it sadder. And then it turned out to be like this cottage thing, because it was word of mouth, and before you know it, it became like this huge thing. And now they're actually based in Nashville, which is, well, right now I have my own studio, and I have a computer, oh my God. But back then, I didn't even have a computer. So what was really kind of like a bad thing was a good thing, because I got a chance to go down to the studio and use their workstation, so on and so forth. And I kind of miss what happens when you get a chance to, what do you call it? You get a chance...
You know, Bill Reinhold has to go to the bathroom.
Jesus, Bill, did you hold it? Cry out loud, man.
I don't think anybody in there.
Well, you better stay there. And so it's
the magic of
media. And I really miss being able to like hang out with those guys, because what you perceive them to be like is exactly how they are. They're really good people. You go in there and you get that feel, that energy in the air. And I miss it. And when they moved out to Lombard, it was great, because they took a Woolworths and they converted it to like this cool studio. It was like two floors.
A little history. Initially, when they first were coming out there, and it was a big deal if you were a Lombardian, there was an old movie theater that had been closed down. It was the DuPage Theater.
There was controversy there, yeah.
There was huge controversy, because the theater has now become like a historical landmark in Lombard. But they were, and for years it had been nothing. It had huge flooding problems, and it had just sat there. It was empty, but the town really loved it, because it was a historical part of the town.
Part of Lombard, yeah.
And
stop
they were
in the past, Lombard.
But they were going to move in there and make it into their animation studio, and then I'm not sure what happened at that point, but I know they ended up
they outgrew it. It turned out that, God bless. I mean, we all wish we had those kind of problems, because they were so successful. What it is, the plans, they anticipated some margin for, you know, the elbow room for growth, so on and so forth. But by the time they broke ground and they started building, they had already outgrown those facilities.
Okay.
And people had already purchased homes. It was sad for everybody involved. Yeah. It was going to be so fantastic. Oh, it was going to have a roller coaster running through the thing.
I remember driving past it before they really had started to build, but they had like these big cutouts outside of it. And it was all the characters, and I'm like, wow, how cool is this? This is going to be an animation studio in my hometown.
Oh, my God, multi-million dollars.
And
because of ordinances where you have to have a certain amount of, I don't want to bore these poor people to death with zoning, like parking,
zone
per
talk
capita.
Podcast.
And by the way, the blueprints, starting with page one. No.
Welcome to Around Zoning.
Yeah, let's read previews.
Yeah, cover to cover.
Hey.
It boils down to where, they're located in Nashville now, but that's okay, because the internet, thank God for the internet.
Sure.
You know, there's email and there's faxes and there's phones. So just recently, their latest episode, they had a chance to bring Larry Boy back, which is where I first got my exposure to the VeggieTales experience. And I love, love, love VeggieTales. And so to get a chance to do Larry Boy again was so much fun, because if anyone's familiar with that character, he was spoofing Batman, because he had the Larry Mobile and the Larry Cave.
Larry
and he even had the Bat Signal. And now he's doing a little bit of a Spider-Man shtick, where he's got these suction ears. Well, you got to know the character, don't know what I'm talking about. And so he's using his suction ears like web slinging. You know, so he's like going through the buildings, doing this and doing that. So I'm drawing Larry Boy doing his Spider-Man shtick, and at the same time, on the same drawing table, I'm drawing Spider-Man for reals for a PS2 game that's coming out next month.
Wow, cool.
So that doesn't happen every day. So I'm doing Larry Boy doing his Spider-Man thing, and I'm doing Spider-Man doing his Spider-Man thing at the same time in two completely different styles.
Oh, that's very cool.
That was fun.
I was just thinking about a funny thing that happened to us.
It better be funny.
It was pretty funny. A few months ago, we put an Amazon store on our website, just if people want to buy stuff from Amazon, they can help us out a little bit. But part of the section was like a DVD section. And when you clicked on it, like a couple of, it was all keyword related, and it was just like comic books and superheroes. But one of the first things that came up was a VeggieTales.
Yeah, and I was like, why is VeggieTales?
Yeah, and Tom's like, and he's like, what is, you guys, are you guys having the VeggieTales artists on? And we're like, well, yeah, actually.
Now that you mention it, oddly enough, it's like Disney, though. There's so many people that contribute, and I feel very fortunate for being one of the few. Well, not few. There's so many, but I feel like very flattered that they gave me this big honor a few years back, where I was working on one of their projects, and they had already established a house style,
mm-hmm.
like Mickey Mouse. You know, you look sure. at Mickey Mouse, it has to look a certain way. Well, I had done some work on this one particular project that was not really for Big Idea; it was for a toy company, and so. Although Big Idea recommended me, the toy company was technically my employer. So I was working with the toy company. It was great because it was really fun people to work with. But they kind of allowed me to be a little more Francesco. So I kind of deviated more from the house style that had already been established because that was what the toy company requested for me. Because they had already completed the project in a 3D style.
Right.
But the company wanted something a little more kid-friendly, more in a cartoony, comic booky thing. And so, da-da-da-da, here comes Francesco, right? Well, it turns out...
Francesco!
Francesco! I'm sorry, I got it wrong. We can edit that part. And it turns out that the way that it works, once the company, once they were happy with it, they still had to go back to the licensor to get approval.
Right.
And so when it went back to Big Idea, the company I had been working with, they all had a meeting and said, okay, from now on, this is what the house style is going to be like.
Wow.
So, yeah,
cool.
So that was very flattering. So
oh, yeah.
It was fun for like something that I didn't even see coming, you know. So
sure.
Every time they call, I'm always there. Even
that's
I'm super busy, I always have time for VeggieTales. So when you want a VeggieTales... Hell yeah.
Nice.
Oh, wait, did I just say hell?
And VeggieTales
in the same sentence.
I apologize. That
yeah,
one.
You're going to have a message on your answer machine when you get back home.
Never, ever mention hell and VeggieTales.
Yeah,
so what else is going on in the world of Francesco?
Well,
exclamation point.
Exclamation point. I'm doing a lot of cover work, mm-hmm. and I just did some stuff over at Simon & Schuster, mm-hmm. and which is fun because it's a chance to get my work seen by... people who normally wouldn't pick up a comic book.
Sure.
Adults.
Adults.
Stop it.
Okay.
Which is a scary thought right there. It turns out that I'm always trying, because of the VeggieTales example, I'm going to always try to be open-minded enough when something comes along that I will go ahead and give it a shot because I hate to think what it would be like if I never did do anything for VeggieTales because that opened up a whole
right.
new world for me because... I mean, my nephew didn't even know what VeggieTales were, but I didn't know what VeggieTales were, but my nephew did, because, you know, after school, they have these, you know, like, it was called Bobcats, where, you know, after school, kids get to hang out, you know, it's like these little,
groups.
like babysitters.
Groups, yeah, yeah.
And they eat these things
yeah,
up for morning,
sure.
noon, for lunch, breakfast.
You never know what phone call you're
going to
get.
Brunch.
You never know what phone call you're going to get that's going to pay the electric bill. And
right,
that's,
right.
That's kind of probably what happened
there. You
international
see a lot
calling.
Of comic artists that, that's all they do. They don't go off and do other work, other illustration work. It's like, yeah, I'm a comic book artist, that's all I do. You know, it's like, but then you see a lot of guys that it's the complete opposite. It's like, yeah. I'm an illustrator, I'm a, you know, graphic designer, I'm this kind of art, and I do comic books too, and it's amazing that you can see guys just going kind of back and forth through that, and yet they're, well, I don't know what my point is. But
there seems to be a theme.
I see where you're going with that.
But it's just interesting to see that it all sort of relates to one another.
Let me
talk
to Tony about...
Tony Akins,
yeah. I mean, it's also sort of ties in that because
yeah,
storyboard. He did storyboards
sort
of for commercials.
Yeah. And sure, you know, it's important that it pays the rent, so on and so forth. Because let's face it, being a starving artist is not fun. But
being hungry isn't cool.
Never. And so it turns out that it's fun to be able to do something that, even though it does pay the rent, it's fun. I mean, it feels like play.
Sure.
It doesn't really feel like work. And what's exciting for me is that when I go to conventions, you see, like, quote-unquote, the adults, the big kids who are into the Spider-Man and the Wolverine and the this and the that, which is what I'm into. I love that stuff. But then you see these little kids, and their heads are, like, right there at eye level, right by the tabletop. And they're bopping along, and their eyes are completely glazed over because they could care less. They're there because their dad or whatever is into, like, you know, the next Batman, whatever. And all of a sudden, their eyes get, like, super huge as soon as they get to see the tiny little vegetable.
Boy.
So I always make room for, like, VeggieTales at the table.
That's cool.
And it's nice to be able to see how the kids respond to that because when you and I were growing up, we had, like, Donald Duck, Mickey Mouse, and we had all that. But when these kids are going to be our age, the characters they're actually going to be relating to are the VeggieTales,
sure,
sort of thing.
Sure.
So it's nice to be a small part of that. Very small part.
Don't sell yourself short. She-Dragon, still ongoing, correct?
No. Make it happen. Actually, what happens is this. It was a special.
Okay.
And I would love to do more She-Dragon.
Yeah.
I would love to do more. Anything to...
Because your sequential stuff is awesome.
Well, thank
you. As much as I love the VeggieTales stuff, edit that out, Sal. I love
that's
your...
a bumper.
I love your sequential work.
Well, thank you.
And it's exciting to see, and I hope that...
Yeah, I have to agree. I don't see enough of your comic book work out there. I would like to see more work. So get to work.
I will.
Get to, damn it, just
I'll
get
make
out
it
there
happen.
And start
I will.
Pages, I'll... write you something. Just draw it.
That sounds like a project waiting to happen right there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
There's this Eric Larson guy image that you can pitch stuff to. I don't know if you've heard of him. So.
I hear he's an asshole.
Yeah.
He's supposed to be like...
I'm afraid to talk
to
him.
He's like a horrible... Well, actually, we were talking earlier before we started, but there's someone who has this history where he's like this horrible human being, and he's one of the nicest people I've ever met. And we were doing a signing in San Diego with She-Dragon. And, I mean, I would see people come up, and you could sense the hesitation. But Eric Larson is, like, one of the nicest people, and he genuinely hates being the bearer of bad news because not everybody's stuff is going to be up to snuff.
Sure.
And even if it's beautiful stuff, it may not necessarily be what Image
is looking for.
You can't put out every nice thing you see.
Exactly.
You know?
And so he has to be that guy.
Yeah.
And he hates being that guy, but he also loves comic books.
And he also saved that.
Yeah.
He saved
Image. Look at
Image
now,
and
the stuff that Image puts out now is amazing.
See, I'm completely biased. I cannot agree with you more. I'm totally biased, but by the same token, yes.
He has to be the guy that says, you know what, you're not quite there yet, but for a lot of people, he's the guy that, you know what, yeah, this is going to work, and we're going to run with it.
I
so he does make a lot of people's dreams come true, and Image is... It's my favorite publisher.
There are weeks when I buy more Image than... there's a couple of weeks ago where I bought more Image titles than I bought others. I mean, it was Walking Dead, Invincible, everything.
I love
Invincible. All that comes out.
As a fanboy, I love comic books. But the same token, as a creator, I know what it's like to be a freelancer and trying to make a mark, so on and so forth. And I hear stories about how, back in the day, and Superman and
Creator's Rights. You were sitting next to Bill Reinhold, so.
Well, God. How did I get the short end of the stick there? No, Bill's great. We love Bill. And so what happened is you hear stories like, back in the day, that's when they had, the pioneers had to, and I'm not discounting that, but at the same token, we still have to fight that fight today.
Sure.
Creators need to carve a niche for themselves. And I'm thinking, what would the industry be like if Image was not in it? Image is the only place where they won't take a piece of the pie.
Mm.
The only place. They won't penalize you for being successful. In other words, there's a flat fee up front. And if it does a gajillion books, or if it only does five or six, first of all, they won't publish it if they feel that it won't do more than five or six copies. But
seven's the cut.
Seven. Anything around that? Exactly.
Lucky number seven.
Lucky seven. And so that's what's beautiful. And I'm thinking, if you could go to other publishers, and they do creator-owned stuff, but they also take the marketing the merchandising or the, God willing,
the
there's a movie
or
something. Right.
The movie options, and that's what a lot of it's about now.
Gravity. Mike Norton.
Yeah.
I mean, they bought that from him, but, it's like he can't. I mean, they could kill off a character he created, help create, and it's just like, wow, that's amazing to think, nowadays that still could happen to somebody. That
and it does, and so I found that out firsthand. The very first thing I ever did for a big publisher was I created a character for the Green Lantern Corps. I mean,
which character?
His name was Adam. He was like really big. He had seven fingers. And what happens is he was like the very first thing and only thing I did for DC Comics. One day maybe I'll do more. But what happened was I got a chance to create the character from scratch. I mean, I love the Green Lanterns. And so when I found out I got a chance to draw a Green Lantern story, I was like, great, which one do I get to do? And it was like, I get to make up my own. So the writer came up with the concept, but he was a blank slate. I could have came up with anything. And I kind of did. I deviated a little bit from what they were suggesting.
Right.
The editor was all for it. The writer was cool with it. So Adam was all mine. Although DC owns him, lock, stock, and barrel. But he's my baby. I mean, we're guys. The closest thing we'll ever come to giving birth, you know? So
making a Green Lantern.
He's my baby.
Well, but no, but the creative birth of a character. That's you know, has to be something that's, especially, you know, if, and I'm assuming this was, you know, a few years back when you were probably just starting off and getting into it. It's like, that has to be an amazing feeling that, and you had sort of touched on that before, about you were part of something. You know, you were part of something in a little way that's bigger than yourself, you know what I mean? And
absolutely.
That's, but you don't own it anymore. They can do anything they want with it. They can.
Never owned him.
Right.
I never owned him to begin with.
Right. Well,
but at the time, I was just excited and I was flattered. I mean, I was like some schmuck nobody ever heard of. But here, they
allowed
me. Was
this before the exclamation point?
You know, it probably is. It probably is. I think it was. Yes. And it was the. It was one of those things where I was very flattered. I was like, great. And so I did that without even thinking twice, no hesitation. And immediately thereafter, I was offered a book at a small publisher called Triumphant Comics. And anybody who remembers, they were that small company that actually had a serial number on each one of their comic books.
I think I do remember that, yeah.
And so I actually got a chance to create their flagship title. And it was like it was a book called Scavengers. And so not only did I create one character, I created a whole bunch for them. And I didn't care. I was just happy to do it. So I created them for them, no problem. Then after that, Marvel called, and I created a whole bunch of characters for Marvel for a book called Fusion Force. And what happened there was Clive Barker had his own universe. It was called the Razor Line.
Okay, yeah, I remember that.
And so they were going to expand the line. Long story short, I was creating all these characters for all these other companies, and I was happy to do it. And I wasn't like seeking out, okay, do you have any books that I could create characters for? It's just the way that they were all coming about. But then I got to a point where I was like, you know what? I don't like the fact that I could sit there and do something and then not have a say-so in their future and what can be done with the character. Because the one Green Lantern character was killed off.
Did Hal Jordan kill him?
Yeah. But the bad Hal Jordan, not the good Hal Jordan. The bad Hal Jordan. He killed a lot of great people.
Thank you, Jeff. John.
Well, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting, though. I mean, I never really thought about it before, but I mean, you know, Marvel or DC hires an artist and they come on Batman. And you draw Batman for, you know, whatever, 12 issues, and you may never do anything other than you're telling stories about Batman,
right.
And you don't influence that universe of the mythos of Batman all that much, but if you come onto a book that's an established title or a new title, and you create a whole line of characters, I mean, there should be some difference there.
Well, if you're like a Bendis or something, where you actually have that kind of a
sure there is,
but if you're just like, you know, some guy who just loves to draw, I mean, I was flattered. I didn't, you know, I don't want to sound like I'm complaining, but it came to a point where I was just like, you know what? It gave me the confidence to do my own characters. And one day, when I actually have enough free time, I'll go ahead and finish that off and actually publish it. But what happens is, it gave me a different perspective, and it made me appreciate Image Comics for what they represent. Because when they first came on board, sure, they were so exciting and so hot and so this and so that, but they allowed people like myself a chance to have an outlet, because until Image came along,
there was no chance.
It was almost a monopoly.
I mean, it was you know, it was either you worked for Marvel or DC or you didn't work. Really.
I think now we've really seen a rebirth of Image, to where, you know, they came out of the gate so fast and everybody knows everything. In the 90s that happened, but I think in the last really, what, 4 or 5 years, Image has really been reborn. And I don't want to sound like we're kissing Eric Larson's ass, but Eric Larson saved that company and saved a lot of great books
that really have an impact on the industry now that we may not feel for years and years till, you know, from now.
I agree.
Some of the guys that are working on those books. You look at guys like, you know, Clay Moore and Matt Fraction.
Well, you look at a book like Walking Dead, and that set
absolutely.
Off a whole change in the industry. Everybody's doing zombie books.
Right, right.
None of them may be as good as Walking Dead,
they're
but nonetheless,
all copies of the copy.
I mean, you know, that was Image. That was they took a chance on a zombie book when nobody was doing them, and it set off a whole spiral of zombie books. So yeah, they keep doing that kind of stuff. And like Tom said, I mean, there's weeks where I buy more Image books than anything else, just because they're some of the best books out there, and
they're,
you know,
good.
Good stuff. So.
And I love that Image has a whole bunch of different stuff out there, because they have a little bit of something for everybody. But what I really, really love is superheroes. And I love that She-Dragon is like, middle of the road, superheroes.
Makes no apologies.
I'm going to hit you with a car.
This is a superhero book, and this is what it is. And so, oh my God, you know,
You're having fun, we can tell.
And that's the thing that I always notice about Francesco, exclamation point, is that you have is that you seem to have so much fun doing what you do.
Well, thank you.
It is just like this passion, and it just, even in your forum posts, it's just like, man, this guy's having fun doing what he's doing.
Well, I think the minute that stops being the case, that's when I have to figure something else to spend my day with, because I feel very fortunate. Yeah.
Law school.
Yeah.
I lost my passion.
Well, Francesco, thank you so much for coming out.
No, thank you.
And, you know, we really enjoy that. And like I said, I want to see more work out of you, so I'll do whatever I can.
All right.
I don't know what I can do, but
work, damn it.
Make some calls.
All right, I'll see what I
can do. Yes, Larson.
Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed the little mini con that we put together.
I enjoyed it. Hopefully we'll do more of these.
Yes.
I think that
will definitely
be a possibility.
Yeah.
Okay, make that happen.
All right.
Make some calls.
I'll get
every 50
I'm
or
it.
So episodes.
Great.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, I'm Paul Jenkins, and Sal's British accent sucks the dead shit out of Dead Seagull's arsehole.
All right, we're back with our good friend John Suntress, and we're here with three creators that came for the Minicon, the Chicago Minicon. John, why don't you go ahead and introduce us?
I'd be happy to. They're friends of mine and excellent creators. We've got writer Rafael Nieves.
Hello.
And artist Tony Maldonado and artist Doug Klauba.
That's right.
And thank you guys for being here.
Sure, thanks.
Thanks for having us.
And these guys have very interesting, diverse backgrounds, but they've all worked together as well. And one thing I want to point out first is a project that I mentioned when I talked to these guys in Wizard Chicago, and that's Raph and Tony are working on a little thing called Blackbirds, which I think is going to be a fun little horror story that they got going on. Tell us about that, guys.
I hope it'll be a fun little horror story. Blackbirds came about as a way to kill a few minutes with a potential publisher and a good friend of ours, Lamoris Richmond. We were at the one of the Chicago cons, and Lamoris, who self-publishes, wanted to branch out and publish something of mine and Tony's. So he asked us what we had, and I made something up on the spot.
And it was a big surprise for me as well.
Yeah, poor Tony's sitting there realizing that he's got to draw this thing that he's never even knew existed until I started talking about it.
I thought he was just holding out on me, personally. I didn't know he had this in the works. And I'm thinking, why haven't I heard about this? We've known each other like 18 years, so. And it's the first time I'm hearing about it. And, well, now I'm drawing it, so.
All 64 pages
it's
of it.
It's a great, beautiful, 64 pages.
Two guys.
Somebody 48 pages earlier, so.
Two guys on a road that, you know, I mean, kind of that look a little bit like you and Tony.
Kind
Raph,
of look, yeah, well, you know, it was like I had to come up with characters on the spot, and I thought, oh, gosh, I'll make it us.
That's right. I draw myself constantly, so.
Write what you know. I think that's, you know,
yeah,
I hear that
absolutely.
A lot.
And what was funny was, I mean, we were at a convention, so I started talking about these two guys who look remarkably like us.
Right.
Both
handsome
very,
doubles.
Very handsome.
Yes.
Thank you. And youthful.
Totally hot.
Youthful. Yeah, virile. Yes. Viral.
Muscular.
Muscular. Thank you. Thank you, Doug Klauba. Obviously, doesn't not need glasses. Very good. Two guys who are leaving a small Midwestern convention.
SplendorCon.
SplendorCon.
That's right.
They're on the road back to Chicago, and it starts off as really much, you know, very much a road picture.
Right. It's like a buddy picture.
Sure.
A buddy picture, sure.
We're both too old for that.
That's right. And kind of
Sam Peckinpah wouldn't think that.
Yeah.
That's true. Point.
Sam's going to direct the movie. Oh, wait.
He's dead.
Well, okay. Somebody's gonna
direct
the movie.
That would be a horror story.
He wanted to. Anyway, so these two guys are coming back from the convention. We find out about their lives and their little mini adventures.
And their friendship.
Absolutely.
Which plays an integral part to the story, actually.
And they find themselves lost somewhere in the cornfields of Midwest America.
Right.
And,
which is scary enough on its own.
Yeah, because they're two city boys, very much city boys. And you learn that very quickly in the story.
Yeah.
And they see a funnel cloud. A storm cloud of blackbirds rising up from the cornfield. And
that
it freaks them both
draw.
Out because they start having an argument. Are they crows? Are they ravens? I don't
right.
know. They're black. They're birds. They're flying.
Yeah.
And then they get a blowout. And boof.
Things start to happen.
Things start to happen.
Things start to happen. Very
and,
cool.
It starts to unravel really quick.
And it goes from being this sweet, fun, buddy movie into something much, much, much darker.
Cool.
Yeah. Darker,
cool.
scary. And
sounds really good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's really fun to work on it. I've known Tony, as he mentioned, for 18 years. This is our first major project together.
Right.
And I couldn't be more pleased.
We're both very excited about it. And it's definitely very cool to finally work on a big project like this with Raphael. I mean, I've seen all the other people he's worked with, and I've always loved everything he's put out. So to be a part of that now is very exciting. So.
That's very cool. And we are Raph has an interesting history. I mean, going back to Marvel in the early 90s with things like Hellstorm and...
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, and wonderful work at Moonstone as well on characters like the Phantom and good horror stories for Moonstone as well and Calibur.
Yep.
You know, great work as Calibur.
I've been around the block.
So, and it's cool to have the juxtaposition of Tony's art on a horror piece because Tony has that great cartoony style.
Well, thank you.
And I think, you know, much like Oming on Powers, this is, you know, it's fun to see that Bigfoot style used in a genre that you wouldn't normally attribute to that genre in horror. So I'm looking forward to it. I've seen the preview art. It looks great, Brian.
It sounds great. When does it come out? Who's it coming out from?
Well, right now, the publisher unknown. We're still in the process of putting it together. We're doing this kind of differently in that I've only written about one-third of the script. Everything else is we're doing it very much improv.
Right.
As we come up with scenes, we talk about it. I plot it out. Tony draws it, and then
occasionally
it starts
scripting. Add the additional page, additional panel. But
yeah.
Always, you know, we go ahead and meet up and we go over it everything. So I haven't had to change too much yet so far. So, but
yeah.
Like you said, it's still only a third of the book. So.
Yeah. But we want to make sure we've got a big chunk of it done before we start pushing it to publishers.
Sure.
Raph's got some. Or I should say, Tony has some of the breakdown pages over there. So when we're done recording,
yeah,
you should go check it out, Brian.
Absolutely,
sounds great.
And I also wanted to ask Raph because I've always been a fan of his writing because he really has neat ideas. I loved Faye, the Calibur story, and that was a neat little noir idea, a germ of an idea, and everything. And I was disappointed that you weren't able to really go further with it.
Yeah, Faye was, and actually Faye was self-published.
Okay.
Calibur would have published it. I don't know what possessed me to think I could self-publish this thing.
Faye was black and white noir.
Yeah, well, you know what was funny was after my short run on Hellstorm, I really loved what I brought to that character and to the story, and I decided I needed to do something original, and so I created Faye. And I worked with a really talented local artist named Michael Redmond. He's a newbie to comics, and actually, we've only done a few projects together. And Mike, if you're out there, I love you. Come back. I created Faye, and the cool thing about Faye is he's kind of a '60s private eye. He might be immortal or not. I don't know. It's taken me a long time to write him, so he's probably immortal. And he's the guy that everyone turns to when they're in trouble, but no one wants to actually have help. Have him help them because he's kind of scary. He's definitely a throwback to I would say the old Warren comics. That kind of sensibility.
Mm-hmm.
He's very outrageous. Says what he wants to say, and to hell with everyone else. As you pointed out, John, there's only one issue that's been published so far, and man, if I get enough people writing to me and asking me, I might do another issue soon.
That'd be cool. Doug, you've been doing some great stuff for Moonstone for years. You're the one of the real signature artists for their run on The Phantom, and really in a lot of their horror anthologies and adventure anthologies. You were the cover artist for so many neat books, and now you're turning from The Phantom to The Spider.
Yep. Yeah. They're publishing... The Spider Chronicles, it's a paperback prose anthology, so they'll have interior illustrations by a pulp artist named Tom Floyd, and very retro, very illustrative black and white pen and inks, but I'm doing the cover, and a lot of name authors included in the Spider.
Yeah, and much like Moonstone's been releasing a lot of these things, the Kolchak Chronicles as well, and great writers doing these individual stories, and Moonstone kind of dipping into that pulp realm with this, and Doc Savage coming up, and I know talking about the Avenger possibly. We'll see if the rights come through with that. Now, Raph and Doug are working on a project as well, and this is kind of an interesting thing called The Dreaming Men.
It's actually called The New Dreaming Men. And it's actually a creation of Doug's, and I was really, really fortunate to just fall into it. So let Doug talk about it.
It's something that's been I've been kicking around for a long time, and don't really know how it came about. It was just my obsession with Méliès' A Trip to the Moon, the old silent film, and but more of a children's book kind of approach to it, more than sequential comic book. We're still kind of ironing out the whole look of what's going to go on, and it's still kind of in its organic planning stage. We broke it down in a certain number of paintings that I'm going to paint, and then Raph's going to write around the paintings for now. So
illustrated prose rather than sequential comics?
Yeah.
Is that a fair way to describe
it? Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the things that I've got to say this, since this is recorded, right?
Yes.
I am such a huge fan of Doug Klauba. Oh, I've been a fan of Doug's for years and years and years. And it was such a thrill when I first got to meet him, little realizing how close we would become. Yeah. And so when the opportunity to work on him,
You're working on me.
When the opportunity came to work with him on New Dreaming Men, I jumped at the chance. And what's funny is that Doug and I were actually talking about working on a different project before this, and which we may still do. But New Dreaming Men is so, so great. The idea of doing this kind of Jules Vernesian adventure thing, is just really, really great. One of the things,
steampunk League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, put it in more contemporary terms for people that don't
very
know
much so.
The Vern influences.
Well, Raph and
things.
I really clicked on it too, because Raph has a million ideas, as we all kind of talk about, and always positive and very energetic in his approach to creating projects. And that was one of the things that I really liked about it. And then plus the fact when he said, why don't you just paint it, and I'll just write it? Because I have these images, and been wanting to do it. I guess right now I just have to find the time to really start working on it. So.
Yeah, I think one of the things that listeners should note is that Doug called it a children's book, but it really is much more than that. I mean, it's very much. Although I'm sure kids will enjoy it.
But the format is
the format is very much. I mean, if you think about things like Doug mentions Dinotopia, it's that kind of thing. Chock full of illustrations. I mean, I'm hoping to get a couple of words on the pages. that's how much art I'm expecting from this.
Whoa.
And I think.
You can even look at something like Mouse Guard.
Yes.
In the style of the art is very much like a children's book.
Yes,
but the content is not.
Yeah, it's all ages, but approachable and entertaining for all ages and
very
an adult
so.
Audience.
Very much
I think the idea, too, and I've been able to be on some of these Skull Sessions with you guys, hearing about the character ideas, and you're really like, there's so many great classic looks that have been neglected in comics, like the deep sea diver, the old fashioned deep sea diver with that helmet.
Well, I'll
it's
tell
such
you,
a great look.
When Doug first mentioned the movie Trip to the Moon, and then in conjunction with a children's book, I immediately started getting images in my head from that film. And there's so many great images from that you could certainly translate.
And it's really what I think that I'm trying to go for is the whole imagination. And so
that surreal feeling that you get from
surreal
that film.
Sense of wonder. And
you
kind of simple approach.
Yeah.
But back then, very cutting edge.
Right, the juxtaposition of having, like, the deep sea men with their equipment in outer space.
Right.
And that was what typified things like Verne's ideas and Méliès as well. And that's the thing. And it really does work. And now we're at a point where, you know, that show, the Secret Life of Jules Verne or whatever, ran, it was a European television show. And it wasn't that great as far as the actual writing, I thought, but the visuals were incredible.
I agree, totally.
And it was those Rube Goldberg-style machines that would make no sense, but putting yourself in that kind of 19th century
mentality. They immediately make you sort of lose the
the mentality of it having to be realistic.
Yes.
It immediately puts you in a fantasy world.
Yes. You bet.
And
you
I think that's the advantage of it.
And it works.
Yeah.
And it works more to a kid's imagination, because it's easier for a kid to appreciate a ship in outer space,
sure,
than really, you know, getting that
book, you know, galactic battle warship.
Yeah,
or
the ion, the ion, right, propulsion, yeah, we need, yeah, for, yeah, to get it up there.
That simple image of a rocket ship, a point, you know, I mean,
yeah,
that
I mean, we're talking about ship sails on a spaceship.
Yeah, like even
and
like cutlasses in,
and,
sure, in space,
right,
and things.
You know, stuff,
yeah,
that they would have thought
Zeppelins,
would work.
Yeah, one of the mottos of the New Dreaming Men Society is, and I don't know the Latin for it yet, so anybody who knows it, write me, is dare to dream. And it just kind of typifies what we want to do with this thing. It's a throwback in the sense that there's a lot of adventure to it, and what we're hoping to imbue it with, particularly for today's modern reader, is just that sense of wonder, bringing that back. You know, it's like when I saw A Trip to the Moon for the first time, I was amazed by it.
That's probably why it stuck with us.
Yeah, absolutely.
All these years, yeah.
And so it's a great project, and I'm really honored to
be a
part of it.
And hopefully, if it does work out, where, you know, people actually like it. We are talking about, you know, hopefully doing a comic book series then based on the characters. And
cool.
Yeah.
We've already started talking about
it. We've got the Empire all planned. We're just laying the foundation now. And
This is through Olympian Publishing that you guys
Olympian
are
so Publishing,
far?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
It's Olympian Publishing.
That's
right,
the company
the Nocturnals.
That's, right, they're bringing,
yeah,
back the Nocturnals, and they've got a pre-code Halloween anthology of horror stories that's coming,
yeah, right,
out very soon.
Yeah, Tom Nagovin, the head of Olympian, is just, what a genius.
He was excited about it.
Actually,
yeah.
Tom's the one who said, I want
this.
You to do it.
Yeah.
If you do it, I'll publish it.
Yeah, Tom actually saw some sketches that Doug had done a while back.
Years ago.
And he just got really excited about it. And when he heard that Doug and I were talking about this other project that we wanted to do, he went, you know, Doug, this
Don't
the
do
New
that.
Dreaming Men thing would be great.
Be better.
Yeah.
Why
and
would
he's
your
a smart
time with
guy,
Raph
so.
On that when you can do something that I would really like to see?
Yeah. And right. Since
which is how all things kind of come
well,
about.
Well,
are you
Doug,
guys still talking?
It's all we do.
Absolutely.
Doug, going back to your painted work and your covers for Moonstone, how much fun is it for you? I'm assuming you're a classically trained artist, illustrator, and how much fun is it for you to go back to those pulp, you know, characters and be able to, you know?
It's great. I mean, it's really a dream job. When I was a kid collecting, you know, Spider-Man and, I mean, back in the 70s, Doc Savage had some resurgence with the Ron Eli movie, which was awful, but
but it was an excuse to bring back
man,
the paperbacks.
But the movie, yeah, the paperbacks came back. The movie poster was awe-inspiring, but and of course Marvel did some great, you know, stuff with Doc Savage.
Yeah, Doug Munch used to write those stories, and
yeah.
Sal Buscema used to draw them and stuff.
John
terrific
Buscema.
Stuff. Or was John doing it too?
I'm thinking the magazine.
Okay, I thought that was
okay,
Sal, but all right,
and
I'll take your
Tony
word for it.
Tony DeZuniga or whatever.
Yes. Absolutely.
And there you go, see? But for some reason, I loved all the pulp stuff. You know, the serials, I loved Flesh Gordon. I loved Spy Smasher.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and
Did
Doc
you say
Sad.
Flesh Gordon?
Doug liked Flesh Gordon. I liked Flesh Gordon.
Oh, okay.
Well, that's the thing. In the 70s, growing up, we're all around the same age. That stuff was as viable as comics were.
Yeah.
And I think our era of fans gravitated to those
sure.
Buster Crab
well,
films
oh,
too,
absolutely.
As much as you know the big budget movies of today.
And that was sort of what I was getting is that you know there were a lot of you know illustrators and artists that were sort of
doing that stuff,
doing that, and you sort of not categorized, but you associated them with those characters. So it's got to be a thrill for you to you know to sort of be putting your stamp on a character like the Phantom or Doc Savage or the Spider.
Yeah, I mean, right now I guess when I do approach, I think of it as just another project. But I guess yeah, you stand back and say it's historical
yeah.
in a sense of tradition with illustration.
Right.
And you know, fortunately for me, Joe Gentile at Moonstone knows that how much I enjoy the pulps. As much as he does, and we both click on it, we both understand it, and he gave it to me.
And suddenly Doug's work is there compared to, favorably,
well, yeah,
I should say,
yeah,
to like
absolutely.
Guys like Don Newton, and, I mean, give me some of the other names, Doug, of the classic Phantom
artists. Oh, Jim Aparo did.
Jim Aparo, of course.
Beautiful run.
And Sid... Was it Sid?
Well, Syberry.
Syberry, thank you. Yeah. I was going to say Sid Schwartz, but no, Syberry, of course.
Yeah.
You know, and not to mention...
Sid Caesar?
You know, not Sid Caesar.
Sid Luckman?
Not Sid Luckman, exactly, no.
Yeah, right.
Absolutely not.
Well, guys, I think we're going to wrap it up, but thank you so much for coming out today, and I hope you had a good time at the show. And,
absolutely. That was great.
At the show, at our, at our mini-con, and thanks for coming on the show.
Oh, and can I just say, this has been the greatest little mini-con ever.
Yeah,
I hope that... Dark Tower and Word Balloon and Around Comics does this again. This is awesome, and if you guys do it again, I encourage everyone to come out and it's just been great. It's been great meeting fans and having the opportunity to talk to them without a lot of the big convention din. It's just been a little din this time, kind of a din.
It was a nice loud din though. For
yeah,
such a small din.
It was cool.
So
cool. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks,
guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right, well, guys, I think we're in the
Chris,
home stretch.
What happened to you? I think John tie you up in the bathroom?
No, John said he was going to go after my job.
Oh, all right, well, you know.
Did he do good?
John's a pro.
John's horrible at interviews, but he keeps trying, which I admire.
He doesn't give up.
Those are Moonstone guys. Good talent there.
You know, I'll tell you what, that was a real interesting conversation with Rafael Naivis and Tony and Doug Klaba. They have some interesting stuff in the works, so.
Smart guys.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, I tell you what, this is we need to listen to some listener voicemails. We've got some listener emails, and we're going to bring the 50th episode to a
grinding halt.
A painful end.
As I jump ahead there. First of all, one of our good friends was kind enough to send in a voicemail all the way from San Diego. So this is Mr. Pat Wojka, and thank you, Pat, for calling in. So here's Pat.
Hey, guys, it's Pat Wojka. I'm just calling to congratulate you guys on 50 episodes. Wow, 50 episodes. What did we learn from that 50 episodes? Chris loves Queen and Country. Speakeasy died. Tom likes monkeys. And I don't know anything about Sal. Anyways, I'm just saying.
Thank you
guys for the great podcast. And I'm really sad I couldn't go to the little mini-con you guys got going on there. But hopefully I'll see you guys sometime next year. All right, take care. Have a good show. Bye.
Thank you, Pat.
And I think we have learned something about you.
What?
You have the worst British accent ever.
And sure, I can't pronounce Garth Ennis correctly, I guess. And yeah, that's me, I guess. That's me in a nutshell.
Pat, one of my favorite people.
We learned our listeners have a lot of free time.
Yes.
Almost as much as us.
Yeah. They should start editing the show.
That also. Here's another voicemail, and this is from Juan, I believe, in New York.
Hello, everyone at Around Comics. This is Juan Jesus, White Tail to the Forum, and I'm just calling to thank you guys for all the work that you have put in over 50 episodes. I started listening to podcasts through Raging Bullets, and they recommended you. And I was there. I downloaded episode 1 all the way to episode 49. And I shit you not, I have laughed my ass off all the way through. Tom's comments are great. Sal and Chris just putting it on. Everything has been fantastic, guys.
Yeah,
thank you
Tom,
for all the hard work
Tom's
that you guys
great.
Put into
Chris
it.
And, Sal
and honestly,
all right.
I don't have that many people to talk comics with. And just listening to you guys talk about it makes it all worth it. And I have nothing else to do at work. So I sit there, I listen, and I laugh my ass off. One more thing. I really, really like monkeys. I like monkeys, and I like The Flash. And that's why I like Tom's comments. Because it's about the monkeys and The Flash.
Monkeys
and quarter books. He got me on a whole quarter books thing. Midtown Comics hates me with the quarter books. Anyway, guys, take it easy.
Tom brings The Flash and the monkeys every week.
That's
baby.
What I bring. That's all I have.
Well, that's really cool. I mean, that, you know...
part of why we do it.
Yeah, it's the, you know, it's just cool to imagine that we maybe bring some small glimmer of fun to people's lives in some way. That's cool.
On some level, someone
well,
someone enjoys it.
And for some more glimmer of hope that Tom has passed on to someone. We have another funny...
Tom's a fucking rock star, man.
He is. Tom, never leave.
He's wearing his sunglasses.
Yeah. You can't see, but I sit in a chair that's comfier than everyone else. I bring my own chair.
Never change, Tom. Never change.
The talent doesn't do any of the work. I will not fold one chair.
Here's another one.
Hey, Chris, Tom, and Sal. This is Rob Taylor, server 106 on the forums. Just calling to leave you guys a quick little audio at the top of the stack. Well, wasn't really on the stack. It just kind of got sent to me by Tom Caters for writing his comic. It's Marvel 2-in-1 number 80, Thing versus the Ghost Rider, which is kind of a misnomer because Thing and the Ghost Rider never really fight. Written by Tom DeFalco, pencils by Ron Wilson, inked by Chick Stone, and... Well, the issue basically revolves around Ben Grimm being a total dick.
What?
It starts with the Thing accidentally wrecking Alicia Masters' apartment by working out right next door in the Baxter Building. Then, through some sort of crazy, wacky misunderstanding, Ben pretty much almost kills his girlfriend with his robotic punching bag. So this leads to Ben getting upset and going off to throw one of his "oh no, I'm a monster" temper tantrums. After wrecking a condemned building that I'm sure was filled with vagrants or something, he proceeds to meet up with Ghost Rider, who he helps escape from the cops, who were pretty much chasing him for no other reason than, hey, his bike's on fire and we're bored.
Well, that's a violation of traffic laws.
Thanks to this, Ghost Rider hands Ben two tickets to the Johnny Blaze Motorcycle Stunt Show Spectacular.
Valid.
By this point, Ben has calmed down enough to go back and try and make good with his girlfriend.
Aww.
He decides the best way to do this is to take his blind girlfriend to a motorcycle stunt show.
Blind girlfriend. Because girls love them.
Motorcycle stunt show. I guess maybe Billy Joe likes the sound of engines or something. At this point, when they're at the stunt show, there's probably one of the greatest panels I've ever seen, where Alicia Masters is begging Ben Grimm to describe to him what's going on in this motorcycle show.
Oh,
and
God.
There's a thought balloon above Ben Grimm's head that basically says, how can I describe something so magnificent? And he doesn't actually ever describe it to her.
Oh.
Some of that standard, you know, Ghost Rider and Thing team up and fight crime. But, I mean, really, Ben Grimm, total asshole. Yeah. Happy 50th episode, guys. Have a good one.
Well, that sounded like an exciting quarter.
Yeah, so
how can I ever describe a motorcycle show to a blind person? Think about that, guys. Just think how hard that would be.
I don't know. Comic writing has gotten a lot better. That's all I can say.
See how much love you have spread along the comics world.
Books I send to people.
You're like Gandhi.
I
spread joy and
I give
peace.
And I give. I'm going to be shot by someone.
Assassinated. What about,
read an email.
Read an email? All right, let me find an email here. What
I lost my show notes during the shuffle of the day.
All right, this one is from Neil Holman.
Hi, Neil.
He says, hey, guys, I've been enjoying your podcast for a while now. Just thought I'd let you know our new cartoon, Frisky Dingo, premieres on Country Network this Sunday, October 15th at 12:30 a.m., and also premieres on www.adultswim.com tonight at 6 p.m. Hope you like it and keep up the good work. Sincerely, Neil. Well, that's good for you, Neil. I love how people like to send us promo stuff now.
That's all part. You know, there is someone that we have to call.
Who?
Who is a part of the show, and it's
Neil Adams?
No, there's just not. Talk about there's geology. There's not an episode of Around Comics that's complete without
Speakeasy?
Long Box of Love.
Oh, Brian Bowles.
We really do need to call Brian, so we'll give Brian a call.
Uh-oh.
And I'll turn those speakers off.
For 50th episode, this is, you know, sound quality is down, you know, in the shitter.
Yeah, no one cares.
Sorry to Red Hood and your dad for swearing. Sorry, now I feel bad every time.
Every time we met Red
Hood.
Yeah, thanks.
Every time
Tom.
I swear, I think of Red Hood, like, sheepishly trying to turn down this, like... Turn it down. It's like when you watch a movie.
Leave a message.
Oh, Brian's not there. Hey, Brian, it's Chris, Sal, and Tom.
Oh, okay.
No, that's the beeps.
Oh, is it recording?
No. Hey, Brian, it's Chris, Al, and Tom from Around Comics. We're recording our 50th episode, and we just wanted to call and say hello and thank you for all the great long box of love strips that you've done for us, and we were hoping to talk to you, but you probably have a life, so you're not sitting at home waiting for us to call you.
On a Saturday night.
Yeah, like us. But thank you again. You do an awesome job on the strips. We love them. Keep them coming, please, because they're just great.
And, it's not an episode of Around Comics without another installment of Long Box of Love.
Absolutely.
So thank you very much.
See you, Brian.
Bye-bye.
Well, we didn't get to talk to him, but at least we left him a nice message.
Yes, absolutely.
You got an email or anything there, Tom?
Yeah, I have an email. This is from Ryan. Hi, I'm one of the surprisingly few people to have reviewed your show on iTunes, having started listening in the last couple of weeks. I apologize if I have already covered this topic before, and I perhaps just haven't heard it as yet, but realizing that British writers have been making their mark on the comic industry for some time, I was wondering if you had any recommendations for British comics at all, as the UK, as in the UK, it tends to be easier for us to hear about comics from Marvel, DC, etc. I also think it would be a shame if things such as Judge Dredd, ABC Warriors, and Slain were overlooked simply because of one terrible Stallone movie. Thanks for reading this if you get this far, and good luck with the show.
British comics are usually good.
Well, yeah, I mean, I still read 2000 AD. It's still good anthology, sci-fi, horror. There's all sorts of great stuff in 2000 AD. Honestly, I don't get my hands on a whole lot of British comics, so it's hard for me to really comment. I know a Brit who's writing comics that's, Kieran Gillen for Phonogram. So.
Which we couldn't call because my phone plan apparently does not include, international calls. So.
But, I don't know. I mean, I wish we could help you out a little bit more, but we'll probably we'll do a topic.
On the internet. Someone's got to know.
You would think, yeah. But maybe we'll research some and find some good British comics to talk about.
Yep.
But we're American, so we're lazy. And
baseball and apple pie.
That's right.
Time to read them foreign
ass
books.
Kicking.
Kicking ass and taking names.
We had, I'm not going to read it now, but I will thank Michael Worrell. He wrote basically a novella on the Christian comics and one.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going
to
read it
now. We're going to go back to that,
I want to go back to it. I want to read it in our next episode. But Kyle Fallon writes in and says, I'm a huge comic fan, and a few months ago, I found you guys on iTunes. I listen to every show. I work at UPS in the morning and listen to all the shows. But I was wondering your take on the tie-ins of the three big Marvel events, Civil War, Planet Hulk, and Annihilation. I know you guys have touched on it, but haven't said very much. Also, if you have heard any news on them, plus your takes on all three of them. Thanks. Love the show. I listen through iTunes. So, first of all, thanks for listening through iTunes.
Yeah.
And as someone else who used to work the unload at UPS back in my olden days, I understand. I understand
the need
how boring
for some
that can
kind
be.
Of
yeah. So.
Well, I'm reading Civil War and Planet Hulk. I didn't read Annihilation. I haven't been reading Annihilation, so I can't really comment on that. But I don't know my take on it, like the tie-in between Hulk and
I think it really hasn't yet, but it's going to.
I mean, you got World War Hulk coming up, and that basically is going to be the Hulk. From what I understand, it's going to be the Hulk coming back to Earth and
getting real pissed off
because he was sent off by the Illuminati.
He
gets
stabbed in the back.
Yeah, he's not going to be happy. So that's I'm really looking forward to that. And,
I like what Marvel's doing right now. It's probably my take on all that.
I think Civil War has been a real good crossover. I've been entertained by it. I think the artwork's been great. It's been late here and there, this last couple of months and everything. But even so, that hasn't bothered me at all. I think the quality overall has been good. And the thing I like most about it with the crossovers is that if you don't get all the crossovers, you're not missing all that much. But if you do get the crossovers, you're benefiting from – you know what I mean? You're getting another story that also is tied into the main story. You know what I mean? You're not just getting a rehash of something. You're getting additional information, ancillary
to the main story. What I'm looking forward to is reading it all again as a whole. I've been getting all the tie-ins.
In the omnibus?
Because I've been getting all the single issues. And at the conclusion of Civil War, I'm going to sit down and read it in chronological order.
I don't know if I have that kind of time.
I'm going to because I enjoy the series, but I want to look
at it
as a whole.
I've liked it a lot. I've really liked it a lot. I've been pretty pleased with it, and you know, so that's that. What about you, Tom? Have you been reading Civil War?
I hardly get any. I don't get the tie-ins unless it's books that I already read.
Yeah,
it's been good. I mean, it's I'm not a huge tie-in fan. Like the big events sometimes just kind of wash over me.
Yeah.
I think it's been decent, and there's been weak points and strong points, but overall I think it's been pretty good. I've really enjoyed Planet Hulk. I'm not a huge Hulk fan, but I've been enjoying that story a lot, and I think it's been a really interesting take on the Hulk, and not necessarily one that I think has followed the way other people have treated the Hulk, but I kind of admire the fact that they're trying something
different.
Yeah. You know, they can always go back to what they've done before. You know, give it a shot to do something.
Sure.
I read a little bit of Annihilation, and it was okay. It takes a lot for a space book to interest me.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Annihilation just didn't click with me. So.
Same here. Yeah. I had the same feeling on Annihilation. All right. Anything else? What else we got?
What you know what? We've got a couple other emails. This is from Derek. First of all, let me say that your show kicks ass. Chock full of great stuff.
You.
So damn long, I usually have to wait until the weekend to get through it.
Yeah, wait till you get to this one.
Yeah, no shit. You know, we'll probably bump some of these emails to next week.
Yeah.
I think
we got enough.
They're tearing down
for
here.
Two, yeah,
they're getting ready to turn out the light.
We've been here all day. It was a great show. It was like a con. I can't believe. I mean, you know, we put this thing together, and Chris, you know, you did most of the work on putting this thing together.
Thank you to John Centris.
John
helped me out a lot.
And I was, you know, I wasn't sure what to expect, but then it was like, you know, it blew me away. It was like a real con, and all the creators had a great time, and
they really want
us to do more, and so it was cool. And for a 50th episode, what the hell?
Yeah.
And now we have to make a promise to our listeners that we won't do another episode all about us until the next 50.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't that much about.
Well,
at the beginning
it was. Yeah.
There was a little bit too much backslapping, guys.
Yeah,
a little self-masturbatory.
Yeah, it was a little masturbatory.
Well,
is there any other type of masturbatory other than self, Chris? Interesting. Isn't it?
Chew on that one, listeners.
Guys, email us. Let us know.
Yeah, sorry, Alex.
Yeah, oh, God damn.
For our younger listeners.
Oh, God, I feel like an ass.
Well, guys, 50 episodes.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's... Tom, you weren't the regular
I'll have my
from
own
the beginning.
Personal 50,
yeah.
When you do your own 50.
We'll just say, you know, the show really kicked in when Tom became a regular on the show.
Absolutely.
And I think that you are a huge part of it, so I'm thanking you guys right now.
I want to thank you guys for when I lost my kidney and you guys put together that internet fundraiser to get me fresh kidney from an orphan. And we don't talk about that a lot, so I think today is the day that we can bring that up. So thank you for the kidney, guys.
Well, I'd like to thank all of our listeners, because when we started, Chris and I, you know, started doing this, you know, we were going to be happy if we ever got to like 500 listeners, and a few people might email us here and there. We got, you know, and it's gone way beyond our expectations. And the feedback from you guys, you know, having people email us and leaving us voicemails and hearing that you like the show is the really only reason we do it. So, you know, other than, you know, we like to talk about comics, but thank you, everyone that listens, and we hope to bring you more entertaining stuff in the future.
Yeah, we'll say 50 more, maybe.
15?
50.
50 more?
50.
Man, I don't know if I can
do
another 50.
Think about what could happen to us. What if? What if Around Comics stopped at 50?
I think I'm going to need a nice long break in there somewhere.
Yeah, we should take a hiatus.
That's what I said. I told Chris, let's take like a month off. What's the big deal? No, God.
My head exploded.
Yeah, he couldn't handle it. I'm like, you know.
We farm it out to people.
That's what Crankcast did.
Crankcast farmed out the podcast to someone else. Why can't we?
Yeah, what the hell?
Well, I tell you what, I'm not going to go through all the announcements. Well, you know what? Take a week off, folks. We'll give you the announcements next week.
The punishment of listening to the announcements. Well, it's a gift from us.
We'll
to
subject you.
You
to that next week, and we'll just finish up with our regular line. Thanks for listening. We had a great time. Tune in again next Monday when we bring you another full-length episode. In the meantime, we'll be everywhere in
and around comics.
Masturbatory discussions.
If you would like to suggest a topic, send us your comments, or are interested in becoming a panel member, email us at info@aroundcomics.com or visit the Contact Us section of our website. For that and the latest in comics news and opinions, go to www.aroundcomics.com. Music for this show provided by the Podshow Podsafe Music Network, music.podshow.com. Thank you for listening today, and remember to join us next week, where the panel will change, but our mission stays the same, bringing you the best in discussion, news, and reviews in and around comics.